Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mymbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
Now, if you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947, if so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the fact that he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
Quicken Loans knows when your mortgage payment is too big, it follows you everywhere.
Hey, guys, where are we going?
Hi, Big Mortgage.
Dad and I are going car shopping.
Not without me.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
A mortgage payment that's too big can drive every financial decision you make.
Scooch over, little man. The Big Mortgage is your dad's constant companion.
Dad, the Big Mortgage is squishing me.
I'd really like to get a bigger car.
The Big Mo says no.
Don't let your big mortgage payment push you around. Pick up the phone and let Quicken Loans show you how to lower your payment up to 33%. That's a third off your payment. Call 800-928-5199. Quicken Loans makes it fast and easy to say goodbye to your big mortgage payment.
You're not the boss of us.
R2.
Or not.
R2.
Or not.
R2.
Am I going to have to separate you two?
Call Quicken Loans at 800-928-5199 today. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. Call Quicken Loans at 800-928-5199.
And now live from Riverside, Iowa, the future birthplace of Captain James T. Kirk of the USS Enterprise, another episode of Wake Up USA, a UFO study. Your host this evening, Joe Montaldo.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. Welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. I hope everyone's having a great day, great evening, great morning. You know, I know y'all catch us at all different times. Tonight's guest is going to be Michael Cremo. Bringing him back, you know, we're going to be talking about forbidden archaeology and a few other things, so it should be a very interesting show. A couple of things I wanted to bring up tonight. We have moved the room over here tonight, and that's just temporary. We're up to something. Starting next week, there'll be live video feed being put into the room. Pal Talk is kind of helping us out with this. There's a couple of things going on, but we're going to be adding live video both to some of the, for the newscasters, for myself, for the guests. We'll also be doing stuff like PowerPoint presentations, video feeds, things along those lines. Most of this made available by the new Pal Talk room. So, you know, just want to let everybody know that because there's a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot of new things we're going to be adding to the show or trying to add to the show as time progresses. You know, because a lot of this stuff is technical and a lot of this stuff is a pain in the butt. And it's not so much for, you know, like myself and Jeff and a lot of the, like the people who do the news, most of them are very computer literate. Unfortunately, not all of our guests are computer literate. So it can be challenging, to say the least. So, you know, there's some things we got to work out. But be looking for that next week. We will be starting video. Y'all will have to see my ugly mug while I'm talking now, so I'll have to behave myself and not make funny faces while the guests are saying things. But otherwise than that, you know, it should be interesting. Also, it allows us to do a few other things that we wanted to do. Adding video allows us to bring in video presentations as well. And there are some things like I'm trying to put a letter together right now because I want to ask the History Channel about something I had seen the other night, one of their shows they had dealing with cigar-shaped UFOs and airline pilots and things like that. And several locations in the United States as well as in Australia. It's one of their black box shows. And the thing of it is, guys, is there was material. Y'all know I've been doing this a really long time. There was material in this show that I have never seen before. It actually was something I had not seen. I was quite impressed with the presentation. I was quite impressed with the witnesses, the way the evidence was put together, the way it was handled. It was really a good presentation. So I'm going to try to, you know, get hold of them to find out when it's going to air again, if there's any possible way we could use any of it for the show. I mean, because there's information that was very good, and I was very impressed with the show. So it's one of those things, Black Box UFO Secrets. That was it. It was on the History Channel or Discovery. I'd have to check and see, to be honest with you. But History Channel, okay. That's easy enough. But it was really good. If you get a chance to catch it, because as far as the UFO buffs go, there was a lot of really good information there. There was some really good sightings, some really good video. They did get a little carried away with the animations, but still. But see, with this new Rum Pal Talk setting us up with and some of the other features with it, it allows us to do this kind of stuff. And it is something that Jeff and I and some of our guests have been talking about doing for a couple of months now. I think the first show will be up and coming real soon as far as next week we'll start the first video feed. I think the first video presentation will probably be within a week or two of that, so it's just a matter of time to see how that's going to go. But, you know, it's one of those things that y'all should enjoy. It should add quite a lot to the show. It should move things on quite well. Also, too, it allows our guests to do PowerPoint. That's, you know, because if you attend the conferences, you'll notice that a lot of the guests have PowerPoint presentations that they do. So one of the things we want to be able to do is take those from the conferences and put them on the show. It is one of the things that we've been wanting to do for a while. I think if everything goes right, it should work out quite well. So keep your fingers crossed. We'll see how all that's going to go. Moving on to the next thing, a couple of things I wanted to talk about, too, right quick before I bring Dee on to do the news. There's a few things that's been going on recently as far as these, you know, well, as mentioned, that's the reason I was talking about the cigar sightings earlier. Recently, for some reason or another, in Australia, southern part of France, Italy, also in Greece, and a couple of places in the northern part of the United States, we have been getting on average, I don't know, 2-3 sighting reports weekly of different cigar shapes. They're getting so predictable now that actually groups of people are going out there to take photos of these. So I'm waiting to see how this is going to pan out. I'm just interested because if you know anything about the aliens, you might have an idea which aliens this might actually be. But Jeff informed me we have Dee in the queue. So, Dee, can you hear me?
Yes, Joe.
Introduce yourself, and it's all yours.
Thank you, Joe. Hi, everybody. This is Dee Andrew. I am the Southwest Regional Director for ICAR, and I've come up with some interesting news for everybody. But sadly, on a sad note first, physicist James Van Allen, a leader in space and exploration, who discovered the radiation belt surrounding the Earth that now bear his name, died this morning at the age of 91. He was quite the intellectual. The ESA has announced that a European Space Agency astronaut will be breaking the duration record in space. On Friday on the morning of Friday, August 4th, just over 30 days after arriving at the station on board Space Shuttle Discovery, as a member of the STS-121 crew, Ryder broke the previous record of 209 days, 12 hours, 25 minutes, and 11 seconds. ESA Director General Jean-Jacques Dardenne sent a message of congratulations to Ryder, who is scheduled to stay on board the International Space Station until December of 2006. At the end of his mission, he will spend 1 year in space. With outstanding expertise and experience, you are highest flying colleague. And we go on and I'm busy at the door. Someone's at the door. Oh my God, they're on to me. Just one moment, please, guys. Hang with me.
Uh-oh. I do have technical difficulties over there.
Yes, I'm home alone. David hasn't gotten home from work yet. Oh, here, he can take care of it. Now I'm getting back to business here, guys. Sorry about that interruption. Okay, this gentleman's name is Thomas Ritter. He is the first non-U.S., non-Russian astronaut to become a permanent space station crew member. On Thursday, August 2nd, he becomes the first ESA astronaut to perform a spacewalk from the International Space Station when he and NASA astronaut Jeff Williams spent just under 6 hours installing items of hardware and deploying instruments and experiments on the outside of the station. A little more out of Europe. Russia is going to stage a mock mission to Mars. Russia's space agency is seeking volunteers for a 520-day mock Mars mission. The announcement of the simulation is posted on the website of the Russia's Federal Space Agency. The flight will be simulated on the premises of the Russian Academy of Sciences, Institute of Medical and Biological Research in northern Moscow. The Marsnauts will spend 250 days flying to Mars, with a return flight to Earth lasting 240 days. The overall mission would last 520 days with an option of extending it to 700 days. Throughout the flight, the crew will be able to communicate with mission control via email. Within the ship, video links will be used for communication. The crew will have a 5-day working week. Neither smoking nor alcohol will be allowed. There are also several mock emergencies planned to see how effectively the crew responds. The goal of the simulation is to study how a crew's health may be affected by such a deep space mission. The experiment is set to begin in the fourth quarter of 2007. The Perseus meteor showers reached their peak this coming Saturday, but the full moon may spoil the show, but there might be something to see before the moon rises, so go ahead and keep a lookout and see what you can see. And talk about having a ball. The new Mars rover that is on the drawing board is a 2-story tall beach ball called the Tumbleweed Rover. It would be equipped with scientific instruments and be propelled across the Martian surface by winds. Jack Jones of JPL says the winds blowing across the red planet would be the only engine needed to move such a ball from place to place. Okay. They think they have found the cause for the strange bulge on the moon. It is believed an eccentric orbit in the moon's distant past might be responsible for the mysterious bulge around its middle, scientists say. The excess material around the lunar equator has been known since 1799, when French mathematician Pierre-Simon Laplace first noticed it. The reason, however, has been a mystery until now. The moon's peculiar shape can be explained if the satellite moved in an eccentric oval-shaped orbit 100 million years after its violent formation when the satellite hadn't yet solidified. If it was like a great ball of molasses and all around the equator it got deformed, study team member Ian Garrick Bethel of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology told Space.com. Around that time, conditions such as orbit shape and position were optimal for this ball of molasses to cool down and become the solid moon that we see now. Possible mission to the Hubble telescope to repair, do some desperately needed repair, might commence in December of 2007. They're in hopes of being able to do that, but they're holding off till then to make sure everything's safe and will work out all right for that mission to happen, hence waiting until next year. Lakes are found on the moon, or Saturn's moon, Titan. It was one of the major goals of NASA's Cassini mission to find lakes or seas on Saturn's moon Titan. Now scientists say they have found lakes. These are not bodies of water like those on Earth, but rather dark lakes of methane and possibly ethane. They are likely the source of the hydrocarbon smog on the moon's atmosphere that has long made it impossible to see even the surface. This was Cassini's first look at the region. Its radar, which penetrates the smog, was used to find several dozen lakes ranging from less than a mile wide to one that is about 62 miles long. On radar, dark areas indicate smoother terrain. These apparent lakes are so dark that the scientists assume they must be liquid. Any water on Titan would be constantly frozen. However, so the assumption is, these lakes are made of hydrocarbons, which can stay liquid at much colder temperatures. The shapes of outflow channels strongly suggest liquid carved them, the researchers say. We have always believed that Titan's methane had to be maintained by liquid lakes or extensive underground methanophers. Boy, that's a tough word to spit out. The methane equivalent of aquifers, says Jonathan Levine, of Cassini scientist at the University of Arizona. We can't see methanophers, but we can now say that we've seen the lakes. And on that note, Joe, I'll turn it back over to you.
Okay, Dee, thank you, Boo. Dee Andrews, everybody, she's the Southwest Regional Director for ICAR. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be bringing Michael Cremo in a few minutes. A couple things. I want to get back to the cigar thing, okay? Because lately, a few of the ICAR members have been bringing an attention to me that either they have seen it or family members have seen it. Different aliens seem, well, let's do like this. We know there's at least three types of aliens abducting people. And we know that there's at least three types of major craft seen. Cigars, which I like to call elongated saucers. Saucers and triangles, which are the primary things. So I'm not saying that there's another other. We're not even going to touch the orb thing, okay, people. Let's not even go there. But y'all figure it out, really. I mean, there's three types of aliens, three types of ship. Who belongs to who? But when you're seeing these particular ships in particular areas, you can bet there's a particular type of alien in that area doing a particular type of thing. And it is interesting to see how different things emerge in different parts of the world. Kind of gives you an idea of, well, for lack of a better expression, everybody's strongholds, I guess, where they're doing their little experiments and visitations and things along those lines. It is freaky weird, to be honest with you. When you've been doing this as long as I have, you start seeing patterns that sometimes you're kind of like, okay, and why are they doing this? There's just weird patterns you see. You know, I encourage people to visit Larry Hatch, even though we've never been able to get him on as a guest of this show. He's got one of the best UFO sighting sites anywhere. He has laid it out from 1948, I believe, all the way into 2006. You can overlay them, you can change them, you can see the whole planet at each time, you can overlap each decade. It's really nice. It really gives you a real good idea of where the majority of sightings happen. It even shows patterns on how they move around the planet. It's very, very interesting. But on that note, Jess informed me that our guest is in queue. So, Michael Cremo, welcome to the show. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Great to be with you and all your listeners.
Well, I'm glad to have you back. Ladies and gentlemen, again, Michael Cremo, it's always nice to have you on the show. I was looking forward to talking to you again. I know we barely got to touch on anything last time you were here, which is about normal for a first interview. You know, we usually talk and there's, you know, a lot of stuff to go through just to get people a feel of who you are. But on that note, let me get you to tell the audience a little bit about yourself, why you're involved in this, and then we'll start from there.
Well, I began my work with a book called Forbidden Archaeology, which presents archaeological evidence for extreme human antiquity. You know, according to the current scientific ideas, human beings like us came into existence only about 100,000 years ago, having evolved from more primitive ape-like creatures. And generally, they say all the physical evidence, all the archaeological evidence supports that idea. However, when I did 8 years of research into the whole history of archaeology, I found something else, namely that there are hundreds of discoveries of human skeletal remains, human footprints, and human artifacts going back tens of millions, even hundreds of millions of years, right back to the very beginning of the history of life on Earth, which is what we'd expect to find if what we see in the ancient wisdom traditions is true. Now, I'm most familiar with the ancient Sanskrit writings of India, which tell us humans have existed since the beginning, but it's something that's also found in the Bible and the Quran. Practically every ancient wisdom tradition in the world says humans have been around since the beginning. So there's evidence to support that. It's not very well known because of a process of knowledge filtration that operates in the world of science. However, the evidence is there. And then after that, you know, people began asking me, well, if you've got all this evidence that contradicts the current theories of human evolution, then where did we come from? So to answer that question, I wrote my latest book, Human Devolution, A Vedic Alternative to Darwin's Theory, in which I basically say, well, we didn't come up from matter. We didn't evolve up from matter, as most scientists now say. Rather, we have devolved or come down from some higher level of the cosmos, a level of the cosmos dominated by pure consciousness or spirit, if you like that word.
Oh, the spirit word always makes me a little nervous.
Yeah, well, then we can call it pure consciousness, if you like.
That's a better one for me. Unfortunately, Michael, over the years I've noticed when it comes to spirit, everybody has their own meaning of what spirit is, and it seems to cause more confusion than it does anything else. But I'll let you finish. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, that's fine. But I think we can all agree that we're all conscious beings. You're conscious. I'm conscious. All of your listeners are conscious. Otherwise, we wouldn't be involved in this whole process of having a radio show with you asking questions, me giving answers, and people listening and maybe participating themselves. It may seem like something very difficult to talk about, you know, like consciousness or spirit or whatever, but it's actually the foundation of our whole existence. I mean, we wouldn't be able to relate to the world, to ourselves, to others, if we weren't conscious beings. So it's the most fundamental aspect of our whole existence. It's something we all experience daily. And so it's really not something abstract. It's something very concrete in that sense. So I think, as I say, some people will want to label that thing, you know, spirit or soul or something like that. I prefer to call it a particle or, you know, entity of pure consciousness. But then it becomes like a question. Say, you know, people ask, where did human beings come from? That's the topic of my research, really, in both of my books, Forbidden Archaeology and Human Devolution. So people ask, well, where did human beings come from? And I think before we even ask that question, it's better to first ask the question, what is a human being? Because that will set the direction for our research. Now, many scientists today think that a human being is simply a combination of ordinary material elements, you know, iron, calcium, phosphorus. That's what we are. We're a combination of atoms. There's nothing more to it than that. We're just a material being, basically. But I think if we look at all the evidence that comes to us from various fields of scientific investigation, we're going to see that it's better to say that a human being is a combination of three things. Ordinary matter, yes, that's part of what a human being is, but beyond that, there's a subtle mind element, and beyond that, there's this element of consciousness. And when I say that mind and consciousness are elements, I mean that they have their own independent existence. They're not just temporary byproducts of electrochemical activity in the brain. There is such a thing as a mind element. And there's a lot of evidence for it. It comes, for example, from a lot of scientific research that some people will label psychic or paranormal. But it's research that's been carried out by scientists indicating that there is associated with the human organism a subtle mind element that can act in very strange ways that go beyond our current understanding of the laws of physics. It takes you into studies of psychokinesis, mind over matter, telepathy, you know, the ability of one mind to communicate with another mind by not going through the ordinary channels of communication, but through more subtle channels of communication. And these things have been studied by noted scientists. And then there's evidence for a conscious self that can exist completely apart, from the body. It comes from evidence of reincarnation memories, evidence of out-of-body experiences, and things like that. So when you put it all together, when you put all the information that comes to us from various fields of scientific investigation, we're going to see that a human being is a combination of matter, mind, and consciousness. You sort of look at it in terms of a computer analogy. Like you have the computer hardware, and then you have the user. And for the user to use the computer, it needs some software that allows the user to interact with the computer to do particular things like word processing or email or something. So we're sort of like that. Our physical body is like the computer hardware. Our mind is like the computer software that allows us, the user, to interact with the physical machinery of the body and use it for different purposes. So we're all sort of like that. So then if we want to explain where we came from, well, we have to explain, well, where did the consciousness come from? Where did the mind come from? Where did the matter come from? How do they all come together in the human form? I think once we get to that point, that a human being is a combination of matter, mind, and consciousness, and you just jump in here anytime, if you think I'm going too long.
I was just kind of listening to you because you've crossed a whole realm of topics there that I want to talk about, but I was kind of letting you go because I know we got a couple minutes before the break, so I hated to really get you into too many questions before we got there.
Yeah, okay, so let me just finish that then, kind of set things up for the listeners then. So once we accept that a human being is made of matter, mind, and consciousness, that suggests that we live in a multi-level cosmos, where you have one level of the cosmos dominated by ordinary matter and inhabited by beings adapted to the conditions there, and that's where we find ourselves now. But beyond that, there's a level of the cosmos dominated by the subtle mental energies inhabited by beings adapted to the conditions there, and down through history, people have had different names for these beings. They call them angels, gods, goddesses, astral beings, and it even ties into the modern alien UFO type phenomena that we do live in a multi-level cosmos with beings inhabiting different levels of this cosmos. But beyond this level of the cosmos dominated by these subtle mental energies, there's a level of the cosmos dominated by pure consciousness and inhabited by beings adapted to the conditions there. And that's where I propose we originated. We originally existed there, but some conscious cells became attracted by the lower energies of mind and matter and entered into those levels, became covered by them, and that's where we find ourselves now. So that process by which a conscious self descends into the lower levels of the cosmos, into the levels of mind and matter, and becomes covered by those energies. That's what I mean by devolution. In other words, we don't evolve up from matter, but rather down from this level of pure consciousness or spirit. And the purpose, the real purpose of human life would be to go back to that level, original level. And there's a lot of evidence that we do live in a multi-level cosmos. I mean, we've got evidence of communications from spirits of departed human beings to people who are still living on this earth. We've got the alien abduction, UFO phenomenon. We've got all kinds of evidence that suggests we live in a multi-level cosmos and that our original home is not where we find ourselves now.
Yeah, and that's interesting in itself, Michael, because it seems like there's more and more evidence as time progresses that suggests that we may not actually be from here, not at least the way everybody thinks in that aspect. But in reality, I say this all the time, any way it goes, man is not from planet Earth. I mean, If you buy Darwin's theory and we came from the primordial soup and we worked our way up, the building blocks of life were brought from space. If you believe in God, well, he created us and put us here, we still weren't from here. If E.T. brought us here, well, we still weren't from here. And if even if we evolved downward and out and across and then back up again, we're still not actually from here. So I don't know. It just always seems to point to somewhere else. I'm not exactly sure why it just does. But it's something interesting you said. It got me to thinking about something. You know, a couple of friends of ours, that we talk about this kind of stuff on a regular basis, and one of the things is about the universe itself being sentient and it breaking itself off in pieces so it can figure its own self out, talking about us being the pieces. But on that note, ladies and gentlemen, we got to take a break, so I want everyone to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montalvo. I'm sitting and speaking with Michael Kremel, and we'll start taking some questions when we return, so please stay tuned.
Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mymbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
We're talking with Paul Dow of Timeshares Only. Paul, I hear you're giving people the secrets to selling their timeshares, and now you're also giving them a free $500 shopping spree. Is that right?
That's right. A $500 shopping spree just for posting your property with Timeshares Only.
And that's in addition to learning the secrets and turning your timeshare into cash?
Learn the secrets, get cash, plus get a $500 free shopping spree when you post your property.
So that's like a triple bonus. How can you lose?
You can't. There are over 10 million people out there looking to buy a timeshare, and nobody can connect them with your property better than Timeshares Only.
And you get a $500 shopping spree free.
And if you call now, we'll also tell you the secrets to selling your timeshare free.
That could all add up to big money. So call 1-800-921-0869. That's 1-800-921-0869.
If our consultants are busy, please keep calling.
Call now, 1-800-921-0869. That's 1-800-921-0869.
If you're one of the millions of Americans that suffers from acne or knows a friend or a loved one suffering, please turn up your radio and take down this life-changing information. Introducing Epiclear, the revolutionary new advanced skin treatment imported from Europe, formulated to help get rid of pimples and prevent further breakouts. Great for all ages and most skin irritations, Epiclear is doing something that no other acne treatment formula has ever done. Ever. We're so confident that Epiclear will clear up your skin that we're willing to let you try it for free. That's right, you heard free, and we mean free. Over a $70 value delivered without a prescription right to your house.
Call now while free supplies last at 1-800-656-5993. Nothing to risk and everything to gain. Call Epiclear at 1-800-656-5993. That was 1-800-656-5993. Limit one order per household, please. Call 1-800-656-5993. Shipping and handling not included.
SRN
1690 AM Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
You're listening to the Stardust Radio Network, where talent and technology meet.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm glad to see everybody coming back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I hope everyone's enjoying the show. I know we got a lot of friends all over the planet, so I mean, I appreciate the ones that are getting up early to see us. I appreciate the ones that are staying up late here. So, and remember, thanks to Pal Talk, we will now be adding video features to both the guest, myself, and any PowerPoint video or presentations like that that might be added. Just wanted to bring it up once again. Michael, you know, there's a couple of things you said before we went to break. It just got me thinking about a lot of things. And when we talk about contactees, in general, we meet people who seem to possess a higher amount of particular abilities. It's not that I don't think everybody on the planet has them, because I do think in some basic form, everyone has some type of sixth sense, psychic ability, whatever you want to call it. It just seems like it's dormant in most people. But over the years, I've been meeting all these different contacts. I've never met one that wasn't empathic. All of them. I mean, every one of them are empathic, and some of them are really, really good. We've met quite a few that are very telepathic. Now, I've heard claims of clairvoyancy as far as accuracy. I wouldn't care to bet money on them. 50-50, I'd say maybe 70-30 in some of their cases, but it does seem to be a dormant an ability in these particular groups of people that seem to be coming alive, and it seems to be getting progressively stronger in their family lines per generation. And I find that very, very interesting, because when you start talking about consciousness and trying to figure yourself out, you know, we get into big debates about exactly what a soul is, okay? To me, it's energy. It's the only way I can really describe it. It's what makes us us. You know, the flesh is just that. It's the flesh. It's the energy, the electricity in your brain that fires off, that gives you the thought, makes your hand move. That is what you are. The problem is what is that actually? It's, electricity is probably not what it is. Plasma is probably not what it is. Energy is probably the best term. I don't know, but Michael, what do you think? I mean, it's one of those things that we know as a sentient being, this is us. At least most of us know that. Okay, I don't want to say everybody does, because there seems to be some people who want to deny this. And ladies and gentlemen, this has anything to do with God or anything else. This is what...
hear you right.
Okay, we seem to have lost him, Michael. So, ladies and gentlemen, everybody just stay tuned here for a second, and we'll get Joe back here in the queue.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, Michael.
Okay, I lost the show, however. It was just static. I couldn't hear Joe.
I think Joe just fell out.
Okay.
He's in a remote location.
Because, I kind of lost him. He was talking, and I just lost him.
Okay, well, Michael, we're going to get him back. And, ladies and gentlemen, while we do that, which will only take a few moments, we're going to let everybody know that if you've got questions for Michael or Joe when we get him back here, call us toll-free 1-877-213-4329, and we'll certainly put you on the air with everybody here. So in the interim, ladies and gentlemen, how appropriate for a show like this, you can tell it's live radio. Let's take a listen to this, and we'll be right back to resume the show when we recover Joe, as he's been abducted. He's been beamed away. We'll be right back after this.
What's happening? What's happening? Who are they? Who are they?
And I think they want it. Yeah. Hey. Stranger than land, stranger than sea. I was driving my car on a lonesome road. Then what happened made my mind explode. I was abducted by aliens. Oh, to my surprise, rocking with the aliens was like to see. Rocking with the aliens, the aliens.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, the technical problem has been resolved. We're going to go right back to Louisiana. Live back to you, Joe. You're back on the air with Michael Cremo.
Yeah, I can hear you now. We lost you for a moment there.
Huh.
Amazing.
Oh, that was. So now we're on all hard line now, so hopefully that won't happen again. I don't know. I didn't think I mentioned anything bad. All we was talking about was God, and this wasn't related to it. We're going to steer away from that.
Well, I mean, myself, I do believe there is a God, and I'm not afraid to use the word. But sometimes I just speak of it in terms of we're all conscious beings, and there's a source of all conscious beings, because everything's got a source. But you were talking a little bit before you got onto that topic about the paranormal abilities and things like that, and how most people actually possess them. We actually all do have them in some undeveloped form. It was kind of interesting. About 2 years ago, I was invited to speak at a conference in Canada, in Montreal, and one of the other speakers there was a man named Stephen Schwartz, who was originally in the U.S. government, military and intelligence agency studies on paranormal science. They were using telepathic abilities. They were using remote viewers, they called them, to detect things that were going on behind the Iron Curtain and other places of interest. And it has been admitted that the government did spend tens of millions of dollars on these remote viewing projects. So after he got out of these government remote viewing projects that he was working on, he got into something called psychic archaeology, and he used these remote viewing methods, these telepathic methods, to locate archaeological sites. So he was also a speaker at this conference, and of course I was interested in what he had to say. And he held a workshop on remote viewing. There were about 100 of us there, and it was interesting how he conducted it. He took four people from the group, three people actually, and told them to go anywhere in the city of Montreal within a 15-minute radius of the hotel where we were staying. In other words, just get in a car, get in a taxi, go somewhere. And then they were to decide among themselves where they were going to go there, and then start trying to project the image of the place back to the conference. So there were about 100 of us waiting. The group of three went out. They went somewhere in Montreal, and while they were there, they were also filming the place on a video camera. And then Stephen Schwartz kind of asked the rest of us who were standing there just to kind of open ourselves up and begin writing down the imagery that we were receiving. He said, don't let your mind interfere with it. Don't try to analyze it. Just whatever comes into your mind, just start writing it down. And then he kind of guided the process by saying, what do you see when you look up? What do you see when you look down? What do you see when you look left, right, front, behind, etc.? So, all right, I decided, okay, I'll go along with this. I'll just do it. So I began just writing down the first images that came to my mind. I saw these red glass candles, the kind that you sometimes see in churches with little flames in them. And I just wrote down the whole imagery. And then when the group came back, the remote group came back from the place, the unknown place where they had been, they put the videotape on the screen, and the first image that came up was these red candles. And I actually had gotten it completely right. I had been able to describe exactly where these people had been. It was pretty amazing to me, and I just found it very, very interesting that apparently a lot of us do. About 60% of the people got it right to some extent in terms of their descriptions of the place where these people had been. So I thought that was pretty interesting myself. And to me, I take that sort of thing as evidence that we do have some kind of subtle mind field that's associated with our body that kind of extends beyond the body, extends beyond the range of normal vision. And just like a magnet, it's got a magnetic field that extends beyond the surface of the magnet, you know. So I think each of us has a kind of a mind, not a mind, but a mind, M-I-N-D field, that extends beyond our the range of our normal vision, and some of us are able to make use of it at times.
Oh, I agree. I do agree that the field kind of extends outward from us, and I think sometimes if you can take yourself, your energy, whatever you would like to call it, and flip it over into the, well, for lack of a better word, the cosmic consciousness. Somebody really needs to redefine a lot of these terms, but still, it seems like there you could actually stretch it out and expand it even more, since it would be more along an energy field.
Right. Yeah. I think that's right. If you go into the literature on this stuff, not just the modern scientific literature, but, you know, if you investigate, you know, different cultures and things like that, see, people would have some pretty amazing abilities. And I think a lot of our modern technology is our attempt to reproduce these natural abilities with machines, basically. I think our internet system, radio and television, telephones, these are all our attempts to recreate with technology telepathic abilities that people once had to a greater extent than many of us now are able to manifest. So I think that's pretty interesting. But for me, it's just another part of this whole thing that we're more than just chemicals. There's more to it than chemicals. We're more than just a complex organization of matter. There's this mind element, and then there's this conscious self that observes, you know, what's going on, what's happening with the mind, what's happening with the various energies, what's happening with, you know, the body. And I think it's something we can all notice if we're a little bit thoughtful about it. So the question is how do all these things come together? And I think it's something that really goes beyond Darwinism, it goes beyond creationism, it goes beyond even the alien, ET sort of kind of idea that people have. Because it seems to me that, you know, when people want to think about this question of human origins, they generally want some kind of really simple answer. They want a very simple evolution story, Darwinian evolution story. Well, the chemicals combined together, they turned into some kind of, you know, fish, and then the fish came on the land, it turned into a reptile, and then some of the reptiles turned into mammals, which turned into monkeys, which turned into ape men, which turned into human beings, like very simple story. Or either they want some very simple creation story that God just created, you know, the human beings out of nothing, you know, and that's how life came about. Or they want some very simple ET, extraterrestrial account that the ETs came and they manipulated the genes of the ape men and turned us into human beings. So I think the actual story is much more complicated. I think it involves all three of those things. I think it involves some kind of evolution. It involves some kind of supreme cosmic intelligence guiding the whole process. I think it also is something that has an extraterrestrial element to it. But I think all these things are kind of woven together in a very complex tapestry, where you have, a kind of evolutionary process, some kind of reproduction with modification going on, but not the kind that the Darwinists talk about. It's something that's intelligently guided. It goes from, not from the more simple to the more complex, but from the more complex to the more simple, which is why I call it devolution rather than evolution. And I think it's also something that involves a multi-level cosmos inhabited by all different kinds of beings with some kind of supreme intelligence guiding the whole thing. And I think it's something that's going on in all parts of the universe as well, not just on our planet. So I think there's evidence for all this. The UFO, alien, extraterrestrial type evidence is there. The paranormal evidence is there. There's a lot of evidence that really gets pushed out of the picture by this process of knowledge filtration that I was mentioning. So I think if we actually want to look at all the evidence that's there and put it all together, it adds up to a picture something like the one I'm laying out, and not very much like the one you're going to see in the average, you know, high school or university textbook, this very simple evolution story that we're being taught. Because, it's actually quite interesting that somehow or other these evolutionists have gotten a monopoly in the education system. You know, they've got a government-enforced monopoly where only their ideas can be taught. And, of course, everybody would like that, to have the government saying, only my idea can be taught in the education system, because then there's no competition. And then when there's no competition, I don't think you really get at the truth.
That's true. But I got to say, there has been some recent changes in the teaching. From what I heard lately, now this is a state-by-state thing, Karima, but the thing of it is the way it was explained is because of so many schools and colleges now ban the teaching of God or certain things dealing with God, unless it's like a Christian school or something like that, they're actually saying that you can tell students about evolution but not dealing with man. Current theory is now there's not enough evidence to prove that we evolved the way everything else on the planet evolved. So most of the schools now actually stop teaching it. They'll teach evolution, and they'll say that it may or may not apply to man. At this time, we don't know, which is actually a good thing. There was a couple of states were actually sued over it.
That's actually progress, then, I think.
It's slow but steady, and at least I was glad to hear that, because it was one of the things I used to gripe about all the time. I'm like, come on, guys. I said, y'all talk about evolution. I said, because there is no other theories, at least none that you're aware of. And it was just getting irritating, but I have seen it start to change. Well, and it's like now colleges now that teach paranormal. Ohio State has one. I think Penn State has one, and somewhere else there's one, too. And
there's a few in Europe as well. In England, there are some universities that have departments of, parapsychology, like the University of Edinburgh in Scotland, for example, and I think in Amsterdam, in the Netherlands, they have a university program in paranormal studies there. So I think, I think things are moving in the right direction, because actually most people already believe in these things. It's like there are Gallup surveys that have been done that show most American people, they believe there are extraterrestrials. A good percentage of them believe they've actually seen UFOs. Most people, 40, 50, 60%, believe in and have experienced paranormal phenomenon of different kinds. So, and actually, 80% of the people don't accept the theory of evolution as it's taught in the schools. So, I think most people are already on our side, but we've gotten ourselves in this strange situation where you've got, some particular group of scientists who don't even represent all scientists who have managed to get a stranglehold on the education system and the legal system, so that they're trying to keep their ideas intact and freed from criticism and freed from alternatives. And I think it's something that as Americans, we really don't like so much. Say if our government tells us, okay, you can only listen to one radio station, or you can only read one newspaper, or only buy one kind of car or truck. We don't like that. Or say you can only vote for one political party. We don't like that kind of stuff. But our government, through its judicial system in a lot of places, is saying, well, your kids can only learn this one idea about human origins. Yeah, and I think it's some of the kind of things that you're talking about are happening. That's progress in the right direction.
It's slow, but it is. I mean, it is getting better. And I do. When I talk to most people, I ask them a question dealing with paranormal or UFOs. Even scientists today, if I ask a scientist, "Do you think extraterrestrials exist?" about 99% of them will tell me, well, yeah, I think they exist. Now, they may not think they're visiting the planet, but they do think they exist. So that's a big improvement just over 10 years ago. And as our technology evolves and more of our scientists can see that, whoa, you know, it looks like we're going to start colonizing space, then it becomes a much greater chance that this planet is being visited or has been being visited. So it is interesting the way it's working out, and it works the same way for the paranormal because we're actually starting to understand more of this. And it does, like what a lot of people consider to be ghosts or other things along those lines, even poltergeists. I was talking to a couple of people, and there's a gentleman out of Harvard, and one of his theories is that this is dimensional bleed-through. Not all of it, but a good majority of what we consider to be ghosts is dimensional bleed-through from a parallel dimension. And it does make a lot of sense because a lot of what people say, I'm like, well, yeah. It's just, and he's got some really good evidence to back it up, so I don't know, we'll have to wait and see how that goes, but I'm just glad that Harvey Professor actually took an interest in this. You know, I'm thinking to myself, all right, we're going to make some progress here. We might actually learn something from this guy. And some of the stuff I really think, Michael, at least in our state today, will be unexplainable. Probably for another several thousand years, a lot of it. Maybe longer than that. There's some just fundamental questions that I don't know if we'll ever get the answer to, or if we'll ever get the answer to when we're in this state of being, I guess might be a better way of explaining it. Questions about the universe, I'm just not sure that this technology is not going to answer, not any time in the next million years anyway. And by that time, I'm assuming we should have achieved some kind of intellectual standard that we can't even conceive today. So I don't know, I guess we're just going to have to wait around and see. For us, it's kind of rough, Michael, because we're like in the babies. You know, we're still in the womb. We haven't even really broken the veil yet. We're sitting here on Mother Earth, and we haven't really we don't really understand our planet. You know, one day we're saying global warming's caused by man. One day it's by solar flares. One day it's by this. You know, we're just really pretty much ignorant. I hate to say it, but I mean,
that's a
really
good place to start out. You know.
Yeah, I mean,
I think you're right. I think well, we may be babies, but we've got to take our little baby steps. You know,
and you're gonna fall on your head. I mean, that's
forward.
Yeah, I mean, that's just part of it. And I really think, though, that if the planet doesn't go bug-eyed on us here in the next 5 or 6 years, I really think there'll be some significant progress in all of these fields because more and more key people, are becoming interested in this. It's not that there's not already a ton of people interested in this stuff, but they're not the right people. And you're starting to see more people, the right people, actually get involved now. And they're not convinced of the regular old stories, oh, it's a weather balloon, or it's this, or it's a piece of swamp gas going through. Some people may say it's a ghost, some people may say it's a UFO, and the scientists say it's swamp gas. A lot of these scientists aren't buying these explanations. Well, a lot of these guys have had experiences themselves in the field, so they're kind of thinking, wait, man, somebody's just blowing smoke here, and we're going to figure out why. So it is better. I just don't know where it's leading to. Right now, everything seems to be going, and I don't know if this is true for you, but when I talk to people about these, they seem to be going in 60 different directions.
Well, I think what's happening is we're entering into a period in the Earth's history, you know, the cultural history of the Earth, where we're negotiating a whole new picture of reality. I think a lot of people decided that the previous picture, it's not good. You know, it's not sufficient to explain everything. It's not satisfying our needs, really. So what's happening is a lot of people now are going in a lot of different directions, you know, trying to figure out what the new picture should be, you know, basically. And then I think what's going to happen is all those different groups, they're going to negotiate a new picture of reality. You know, and I think this happens periodically in the history of the Earth. And I think we're going through one of those major intellectual shifts right now, and I think we should expect it to be a little bit confusing because we're giving up. We're starting to see that the old worldview isn't adequate. You got lots of different people, different parts of the world, different mentalities, you know, like trying to figure out what the elements of the new picture should be. And I think we're going to come together, and I think there are a lot of parties to this. I think even the mainstream scientists, as you mentioned, they're kind of moving in that direction. You've got the UFO and alien abduction type researchers, the paranormal researchers, people working from different maybe spiritual points of view, people of all different points of view trying to come up with something. So I think that's why you see, in one sense, that people are going in 60 different directions. But I think that's also why you see progress, you know, being made, because I think gradually we're going to come to some new consensus about the nature of reality, the nature of the universe, our place in the universe, and things like that. So it might be better if we were living in a time, you know, where things were a little more secure, you know, where everybody did agree on some fundamental picture of reality. That would make things pretty easy. But on the other hand, it's very challenging. I think it's a really a wonderful time that we live in.
I do, too. I mean, you know, people always gripe and complain about it, but there's a lot of things about today that I would much just, I really enjoy our little planet. I really do. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think there's room for improvement everywhere, but I think it's much better than it was even, you know, 10 years ago, even 20 years ago. But on that note, ladies and gentlemen, I know we got to take a break, so I want everyone to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montalvo. I'm sitting and speaking with Michael Cremo, and I promise as soon as we come back, we'll start taking some questions, so please stay tuned.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mymbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
What America needs is affordable health insurance.
Finding affordable health insurance for you and your family, it's on everyone's mind right now. If you're self-employed, it's on your mind too. One of the things we face as entrepreneurial Americans is finding affordable health insurance. Well, I found a company you can call right now and get affordable health insurance. Midwest National Life Insurance Company of Tennessee. Write this number down, 877-679-7794. That's 877-679-7794. Midwest specializes in helping entrepreneurs of all kinds, those of us who run small businesses or don't get health insurance where we work, to protect our families with affordable health insurance. Call 877-679-7794. Not available in all states. Association membership is required in most states. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Exclusions and limitations apply.
We're here today with Paul Dow of Timeshares Only, and Paul, you've got some terrific news for timeshare owners.
That's right. In the next 6 months, over $3.5 billion of timeshares will be sold.
So this is the perfect time to sell.
Exactly, which is why you need to get your property into our network, and if you call us right now, you'll also get a $500 shopping spree absolutely free.
$500 free?
Yes. Just for posting your property with Timeshares Only. And when you do sell your property, you'll get cash. It's a double bonus. You can't lose.
Except if I don't call.
Hey, over 10 million people will be looking to buy a timeshare. So we need your property now.
The number to call now is 1-800-921-0866. That's 1-800-921-0866. Turn your timeshare into cash and get a free $500 shopping spree.
And if our lines are busy, please keep calling.
That number again for timeshares only is 1-800-921-0866. That's 1-800-921-0866.
This is Dan Hall from No More Waiting, the folks that get structured settlement holders their money now. So right now, call us at 800-768-6286. Got an insurance settlement that's taking years to pay out, but you want your money now? No More Waiting is for you. You're in the third year of a 20-year settlement, but you want a new car or a new home now? No More Waiting is for you. Need to catch up on bills now? No More Waiting is for you. Call 800-768-6286. Want answers about your settlement payments now? No More Waiting is for you. In fact, No More Waiting has prepared a DVD chock full of information to help you get the most money for your settlement payments. Call today. It's free and there's no obligation. Call 800-768-6286. That's right, for your free DVD. Just call 800-768-6286 for your free quote, your free DVD, and your path to financial freedom. Call No More Waiting at 800-768-6286 now.
Climate change could affect our way of life. Reduce your greenhouse gas emissions and help control climate change. Visit www.vcr-mvr.ca. Brought to you by the Voluntary Challenge and Registry, Climate Change Central, and this radio station.
SRN. 1690 AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Good evening and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sitting and speaking with Michael Creamer tonight. Y'all should know me by now. I'm Joe Montaldo. I hope everyone is truly enjoying the show. Remember, if you want to call in, you can reach us at 1-877-213-4329. Again, 1-877-213-4329. Remember, too, there's also the PalTalk Virtual Auditorium, which, starting next week, will be the PalTalk Virtual Auditorium with videos. things are changing, people. And remember, when it comes to the video or any PowerPoint presentations or any video feed, it is first come, first serve. So keep that in mind, ladies and gentlemen. Michael Weichenbelk, a couple things I wanted to ask you. Well, I guess we ought to get some questions out of the audience before they come and skin me alive. And most of these people know where I live now. That's not a good thing. You know, it's funny, Michael, if we don't, sometimes I'll get wrapped up in a guest and I'll get to talking like we did for the first hour. And, man, I will get tons of emails. You hogging the guest, just goofy emails. It is just so funny sometimes. I'm like, guys, I'm the host. If I want to talk to the guest, I can. Come on. It's just kind of funny. But you ready for some questions?
Yeah, let's get to them.
Let's see who we got up first. See, we have Dimensional Star and a Q, so Dimensional Star, why don't you come up, give us your first name and location, and you're live on air with Michael Creamer.
Hello, Mr. Creamer. My name is November, and I live in Oregon. And your earlier statement on consciousness and mind and the comparison with computers and hard drives and software, I really liked that. That was really a simple way to show how we might be actually evolving. Well, my question is I speak to a lot of people who feel that they are being educated in a way that we don't really have the terminology to explain this very well, but they receive downloads or images, and they learn a massive amount of information from these things. A lot of them associated with extraterrestrial type of communication. And I wanted to see how you felt about that, or if you think that maybe it would be something else.
That's interesting. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, this idea that we live in a multi-level cosmos means that there are different kinds of relationships between the different kinds of entities that exist at the different levels. The ones who are higher, I think they have the ability to kind of program the matter down at the lower levels. Some people would call this intelligent design or something. I think we see lots of signs of that, that beings that are higher in these levels of the cosmos, they can manipulate the matter at lower levels. And then I think another thing that they're able to do is they're able to communicate with the beings at the higher levels of the cosmos are able to communicate with the beings who are down at the lower levels. And of course it's a two-way channel of communication, but I think you're right. I think down through history, you know, we see that a lot of the human knowledge that we have has come from these higher sources in one form or another. You know, it's not that, you know, if we look at, you know, the ancient literatures that we see that they got all their knowledge from establishing universities and, you know, like using test tubes and computers and things. A lot of their knowledge came from these higher sources. Say, like, if you look at Native American peoples, a lot of them still have the tradition of going on some vision quest, you know, to get some knowledge, some information from higher beings that will guide them in their lives. And I think we see this in a lot of different ways. Actually, even a lot of mathematicians have discovered that they're able to solve problems, not by agitating their own minds, but by somehow or other, they call it inspiration. But where does that inspiration come from? I think it's coming, you know, from these higher sources. So I think you're right. I think today and down through history, you know, people have been able to access knowledge coming, you know, from these higher sources in different ways. And, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that it happens in connection with the modern UFO alien abduction type of information. And basically in that field, there's always been two kinds of researchers. You know, one has been sort of the nuts and bolts kind of researcher that just sees the UFOs as kind of ordinary technology, really, more advanced than ours, but, you know, made by beings similar to us from some other material level of the cosmos. Whereas there have been another group of researchers that have started to see a paranormal element to the whole phenomenon, and these researchers might be represented by people like John Mack, you know, the Harvard psychiatrist who died a couple of years ago, but who, when he started looking into this phenomenon, he began to see a lot of paranormal elements to it. I mean, there are people would report being floated through walls and to get to your point, like communicating telepathically with alien beings and receiving knowledge from them. So I think this really isn't so strange. I mean, if we actually look at the, you know, the history of the world, the cultural history of the world, we see it's been happening all the time. And even our own governments have had SETI programs, search for extraterrestrial intelligence. In other words, they think that beings elsewhere in the universe may be trying to communicate with us through electronic signals of some kind. But they may also be trying to communicate with us in other ways as well. I think down through history, there have been certain people who have been able to access, you know, these communications.
You know, I agree with that, too. I think quite a few people can access these communications. But what exactly, you know, oh, man, see, now we're opening up a big old can of worms. No, we're talking about communications from several levels and several areas and several different places. Because I figure if you can get downloaded information from an extraterrestrial, you should be able to download it from what we refer to as a cosmic consciousness or from another dimension, as far as that matter goes, as long as you can access the information. And I guess that comes more from training an open-mindedness than it does from anything else. But I don't know. You know, I know a lot of people who go out there. I know a lot of, for lack of a better term, New Agers. And I really like them. I got some really good friends. But I find that the people who went New Age and then went into, I guess, more firm areas seem to have developed their abilities at a much higher level. I'm not exactly sure why either, but I guess there's less distractions for them. But they do seem to be, there just seem to be a host of people these days that have just get knowledge out of nowhere. They go from being just, know nothing about one particular subject and then knowing a lot. Now, you could say it was the internet, but learning something is one thing. Understanding something is a whole and entirely different thing. And, you know, I can teach people all day long to work on computers or do construction work like I do, but understanding it is an entirely different thing. And these people seem to not only be learning what it is, but they seem to be understanding it as well. And that seems to be an evolutionary step there. What do you think, Michael?
Well, I think so, too. I think it all depends on, see, for a long time we've had the idea that we are the most intelligent people and the universe, and actually we're all kind of taught from the time we're kids, we're sort of taught to present ourselves that, like, we are number one. You know, I am, you know, you go to a job interview or to an interview to get into a university or anything, you know, you're kind of taught to present yourself as number one, basically, that you know it, you've got it, you know it. Whereas in some other cultures and down through history, there's been the idea that, well, like you were saying a little bit early in the show, it's like we don't know it all. You know, we're like little babies, really, and it may need to to admit that there are higher sources of knowledge in the universe. There are intelligences that are beyond our intelligence, and we should be able to accept that. I practice a spiritual discipline myself. It comes from India, and it sort of involves, you know, the idea that, well, yes, there is knowledge coming down from higher levels of the cosmos, from some supreme intelligence. It's been happening since time began, really, and some of the communications are in written form now. You know, they've been written down, and some of them can still be accessed directly. But it's like you say, you need some guidance and instruction. You have to be able to receive these things. It's like if you have, say, like, there are a lot of, right at this moment, there are a lot of electronic signals in the air. There's all kinds of television signals, cell phone signals, radio signals in the air. But you can't pick them up unless you've got a properly tuned receiver. If you got the properly tuned receiver, then you'll get, you know, the television signals. You'll be able to see them. If you've got a properly tuned radio, you'll be able to pick up, you know, the radio signals. If you've got a properly tuned, you know, cell phone, you'll be able to pick up, you know, the mobile phone, you know, signals and whatever. So it depends on having, you know, a proper instrument that's properly tuned to pick up the particular signals. So down through history, you know, there have been, you know, different systems of contemplation, meditation, yoga, prayer, whatever, that are just meant to do that. You know, to put human consciousness, which is actually a signal receiver, basically. It's designed to receive signals. But to put it in the proper state, you know, properly tune it to receive the right signals. Of course, now we're getting, like, a lot of signals. People understand that consciousness is meant to receive signals. So there are a lot of people in this world, a lot of very intelligent people who are trying to get into our heads, you know, who are sending us signals with messages that are meant, you know, to keep us entangled in our current state. Buy this, buy that. You know, there's a lot of people understand that, yeah, the human consciousness is meant to pick up signals, and they try to exploit that for different political and economic and cultural purposes. So just like there's a lot of different television stations out there, so you have to tune your, if you want to get the beneficial programming and not just the commercials and the political propaganda and all the manipulative stuff, you got to tune into the right channels. So I think it's the same with our human consciousness. I mean, we've got to learn how to tune it to get the right messages, you know, from these higher sources.
You know, it is funny when we lay it out like that, and it just seems like you could just keep on going with it. But let me grab some more questions, because if I get into this, I'll never get the question. So let me grab this question right quick. I see D-Dragon. I know you've been patiently waiting with your hand up for a while, so why don't you come up and give us your first name and location, and you're live on the air with Michael Creamer.
Thank you, Jojo. Hi, Michael. It's nice to hear you back on the program again this evening. This is Dee Andrew. I'm the Southwest Regional Director for ICAR. Michael Cremo, I was wondering if you could have any comments on the work that Jim Allen is doing in regards to pinpointing Atlantis in the Andes. Thank you.
When we talk about Atlantis, people have, you know, different ideas about Atlantis. Some of them mean, you know, specifically the island continent that Plato was talking about in his writings, the Greek philosopher, you know, back in ancient times. And others, they just use Atlantis as kind of a more general term for some spiritual kind of civilization that existed at some very high level in the past, and that was destroyed somehow, and we're kind of like the remnants of those ancient populations or whatever. And some people kind of combine the two ideas too, you know, that when they speak about Atlantis.
But as far as those who sort of look at it as a specific place, more or less like Plato was speaking about in his ancient Greek writings, there are many people who have different theories about where that Atlantis was. Some of them put it in the Atlantic Ocean. Some put it in more or less in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. Some put it more near Cuba or the Bahamas. Some people have put it up in the North Sea. I've read a recent book by a South American professor who puts it in the region of Indonesia. And also a few years ago, I don't know if it was the same gentleman, maybe it was Jim Allen or somebody else, who had put it in the Alto Plano, which is a plateau in the Andes Mountains, which is now located inside the borders of the country called Bolivia. And I think this person who had proposed that had noticed that a lot of the dimensions of this plateau, this Alto Plano plateau in Bolivia in the Andes Mountains, greatly resembles the descriptions of the dimensions of Atlantis given in Plato's works on the topic. So myself, I'm not an expert on Atlantis. I mean, my main field is evidence for extreme human antiquity, evidence that humans existed millions and millions of years ago. And the Atlantis idea goes back, most people put it around 10 or 20,000 years ago. So it's not my main area of research, but I find it an interesting topic, and a lot of researchers send me their books on it. I haven't decided myself where Atlantis is, but I do see that it's sort of a common theme in many world cultures that there was an advanced civilization that existed on some island continent that went under the water, that was destroyed, and that we have some legacy from that. And I really do believe that. The general concept I really do accept. In my studies in the ancient Sanskrit writings of India, I find the account of the city of Dwarka, which was a very advanced place, according to the ancient writings, a very wonderful city that 5,000 years ago went under the water. And there are archaeologists, marine archaeologists, who've gone off the coast of India at this location, and they've actually found remains offshore, which could be remains of that ancient city. So I think the general concept is something that we see all over the world. And who's got the right answer about the specific location, I can't really say at this point.
Yeah, I agree with that. There seems to be, who did we just have? We just had Atlantis expert on the show. Can't think of his name now. But we discussed it. And there's a couple of people think it's in a couple of different locations. I personally like that one off the coast of Cuba. I find that one to be just fascinating.
Yeah, well, I think it may be in a lot of different places.
It may be. If it was
the history we have is that the sea levels have been rising in a lot of areas, inhabited areas, have gone under the water.
Yeah,
there's the whole Black Sea area of that's north of Turkey and around that part of the world. That was once all inhabited, but then the waters from the Mediterranean broke in maybe about 5 or 10,000 years ago and completely flooded that area and turned it into a sea, which they call the Black Sea now. And I forget the scientist's name, the one who discovered the wreck of the Titanic. I forget his name right now, but he's also done research in the Black Sea, looking for evidence of ancient civilizations on the floor of the Black Sea. And actually, like a lot of archaeologists these days, they're starting to do a lot more underwater archaeology because they understand that a lot of civilized areas, inhabited areas, are off the coast. They understand that you can't just do archaeology on the dry land and expect to understand what the real history of the Earth is, you've got to go into these offshore areas too.
We're starting to figure that out. I noticed, I know one of the reasons they went looking like off the coast of Cuba is there was some trawlers trawling on the Gulf side of the panhandle of Florida and had found some stuff, kind of had a Mayan Aztec kind of look to it, and they were kind of wondering why it was there. They said, well, maybe a hurricane had picked it out, maybe threw up the sea, but the way, because it was so intact and everything seemed to be in fairly pristine, they figured there must have been a source nearby, and I think the site was about 110, 115 miles east of where they found this stuff, which put it on the other side of the Florida Panhandle and the Cuba coast, which is in the Atlantic Ocean. But which it also does seem to run out towards Bimini, which I found it interesting, and then it kind of takes a turn off towards Egypt. And it's weird the way that, and it may have actually been a continent there, they just don't know. And probably won't know for some time, because, I mean, last I heard it was under 2,600 feet of water. Not exactly the best diving conditions. Even with submersibles, that's a pretty nasty little dive there. I mean, I know we have the technology to do it. One of the things I found interesting about that site, too, is there was just a flutter of information when it first came out, and then all of a sudden, nothing. You can't find websites on it. You can't find anybody working on it anymore. Nobody wants to talk about it. It just kind of went bye-bye. And from the initial things I heard in the three satellite photos I seen, it looked very intriguing. It looked kind of like the Giza Plateau underwater, except for maybe bigger. I don't know. It was weird, but ever since then, you haven't seen anything, heard anything, or nobody seems to want to talk about it, and it's a substantial find. You know, I know that the Canadian archaeology and Cuban are the ones actually excavating the site, but I haven't heard anything. And, you know, I got researchers looking all the time. You know, hey, guys, have you heard anything? Just a little peep, a little whisper. So it's kind of making me wonder, Michael, what they actually found there.
Well, you never know. I mean, sometimes just because they're being quiet about it doesn't mean they're not doing anything. Just may mean they're being quiet about it.
Yeah, I think they're working. I mean, I've heard a couple of divers that we've ran across over the last few years that said they've worked the site, and it was very interesting, but they weren't going to say anything more than that of fear of penalty of prosecution. So it just kind of makes me wonder, what exactly did they find? I mean, usually when they go quiet, it's either because they found some type of technology they don't want to talk about, or they found something that may alter man's perception of being. You know, usually other than that, they don't really care. So, I don't know. I'm thinking this city, initial reports I heard dated this city back between 10 and 15,000 years ago, which is much older than what they give, you know, credit to civilized man, which is, about 6,500 years.
Right, yeah, that normally they would say that the first cities, you know, came into existence around that time. There's also a case in India like that. Near this place called Dwarka that I was mentioning, there were some more discoveries made further out to sea a few years ago. There were some oceanographers from the government of India. They were doing, they were mapping the sea bottom, you know, using a special kind of sonar, and they got images from the sea bottom of what appeared to be architectural structures that looked like a city that had been built along the shores of an ancient, now submerged river valley. So they did some, it was too deep, you know, for divers, too deep and dangerous for divers to go down. So they did some dredging in addition to these, these sonar pictures. And they got some things that came up. You know, apparently they got some pieces of pottery, some human artifacts, and they did some carbon dating on some wood that they got. And it was about 9,000 years old, which again would be older than the, according to the conventional view, the oldest cities that would have been around, like you say, 6,500, 7,000 years old. So there was some news about that. And then what happened with that is it became like a sort of a interdepartmental fight, as far as I could understand. Like, the archaeologists were very upset, you know, that these oceanographers, you know, who were from a different department of the government, you know, science ministries, had done this without consulting them. had announced it publicly to the media, yeah, without going through the scientific channels. And so they kind of, from what I understand, they sort of tried to assert control over the whole thing, and then it just dropped out of sight, like you say. Because I think these oceanographers, they didn't really appreciate, you know, that they were doing something that was going to overturn a lot of the current archaeological ideas about the origin of cities, you know, when they started announcing this stuff. So then there was this kind of, as far as I can tell, this kind of departmental squabble who should have charge of the further research. And I think, you know, it's probably decided, since it's archaeology, the archaeologists should be doing it, not the oceanographers. And then you don't hear any more about it.
It does make me crazy. Well, you know, it's like the city of Angkor Wat. I followed as closely as I could over the one in Cambodia, Angkor Wat. And
right.
There was oodles of information coming out of there, and all of a sudden, boom, it just dried up. And I'm not sure, I mean, sometimes I think it's because they hit a point where they just can't go any further. They either can't decipher what they're finding, or, you know, and it just seems to be a brick wall, and they stop. And I do understand. I mean, they're still excavating the site, but they're not really learning anything else. And I do understand that happens. But on some of these sites, they just become quiet. And I really think that has to do more with, you know, sometimes they find information that dates us to an older society than they would like. You know, they don't want to. And this is unfortunate. And this has more to do with religion than it does anything else. It just seems to be that the powers that be don't want to give that part of the hold on the world up, I guess. But anyway, on that note, ladies and gentlemen, I know we got to take a break, so I want everyone to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montalvo. I'm sitting and speaking with Michael Cremo, and when we come back, we'll start taking some more questions, so please stay tuned.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but you don't want to sit around on your butt all day. You're on the move, and you need your music. This station is linked with a mobile broadcast network, which makes it possible for you to hear your favorite internet broadcasts live on your cell phone, anytime, anywhere. Get connected. Go to www.mymbn.com. The mobile broadcast network is brought to you exclusively by Access Voice.
You know, finding the time ain't so easy. Not gonna find it in your coat pocket or cleaning out the attic. Time is elusive. But you can find some extra time at the Pizza Hut all-you-can-eat lunch buffet. Just a few minutes gets you endless oven-fresh pizzas with all kinds of crusts, including America's favorite, the Pizza Hut pan pizza, plus crisp salad and mouth-watering dessert that's ready when you are. The Pizza Hut all-you-can-eat lunch buffet, every Monday through Friday. Pizza Hut. Gather around the good stuff.
Prices, dates, times, items, and participation may vary by location. Dine-in only.
Quicken Loans knows when your mortgage payment is too big, it follows you everywhere.
Hey, guys. Where are we going?
Hi, Big Mortgage.
Dad and I are going car shopping.
Not without me.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
A mortgage payment that's too big can drive every financial decision you make.
Scooch over, little man. The Big Mortgage is your dad's constant companion.
Dad, the Big Mortgage is squishing me.
I'd really like to get a bigger car.
The Big Mo says no.
Don't let your big mortgage payment push you around. Pick up the phone and let Quicken Loans show you how to lower your payment up to 33%. That's a third off your payment. Call 800-928-5199. Quicken Loans makes it fast and easy to say goodbye to your big mortgage payment.
You're not the boss of us.
R2.
Or not.
R2.
Or not.
R2.
Am I going to have to separate you two?
Call Quicken Loans at 800-928-5199 today. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. Call Quicken Loans at 800-928-5199.
What's happening? I'll tell you what. Ken Emmons here. How'd you like to spend a weekend in Branson for only $99? That's right. You and your family can now relax in Branson for only $99 or take the honey for a quick romantic getaway any weekend you choose. This amazing vacation offer includes 3 days, 2 nights in a great hotel, breakfast every morning of your stay, preferred show tickets, and hundreds of dollars in coupon savings all around town. You know, Branson, Missouri's got amusement parks, world-class golfing, beautiful lakes, endless shopping, and more live shows than Vegas. So give us a call now at 1-866-338-1410. Branson for $99. It's our way of saying thanks for checking out our beautiful new resort, the Grand Crown. Here's that number again, 1-866-338-1410. Toll free, 1-866-338-1410. Branson for $99.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the fact that he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
SRN
1690 AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Stardust Radio Network, where talent and technology meet.
Welcome back, everybody. I hope you're enjoying Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm Joe Montalvin. We're sitting and speaking with Michael Cremo tonight. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to call in, the toll-free number is 1-877-213-4329. Again, 1-877-213-4329. And, of course, there's always the PowTalk Virtual Auditorium, which, from what I see, is filling up very quickly. So if you want to get here, you better get here fast. Michael, you ready for some more questions?
Sure. Let's get to them.
Hey, I see TRMT 137 has her hand up. So, TRMT, why don't you come up, give us your first name and location, and you're live and on the air with Michael Cremo.
Thank you. Mr. Cremo, first of all, it's Teresa from Massachusetts. Mr. Cremo, given your considerable archaeological expertise, I wish to ask first your opinion, sir, on the ancient Irish megalithic mounds or passage tombs, those in County Meath, with their intricate engravings and astronomical markings and placement. And second, sir, in your opinion, do these mound tombs in Ireland's County Meath, such as Tara and Newgrange, have a strong correlation to the ancient Irish myths of the Tuatha De Danann, the Celtic mythical fairies and gods? Could these beings have been perceived by our contemporaries as ETs? Thank you, and pardon my pronunciation of the Gaelic. Great show.
Well, thank you. I think these Irish mounds, they're not my main field of research. As I said, I'm really interested in archaeological evidence for extreme human antiquity. That is, evidence that humans like us have existed in the very distant past, far longer than most scientific theories now allow. And these mounds that you talk about in Ireland, they sort of fit within, you know, the current framework, you know, for, you know, the origin of humanity and civilization. However, I still find them interesting, mainly because of their the connection that you were mentioning with the Tuatha De Danann, the ancient Celtic peoples, who had a worldview, you know, very similar to the one that I talk about in, you know, my book, Human Devolution, which says that we live in a multi-level cosmos. Now, in that book, I have a chapter on the cross-cultural study of cosmologies. And really, down through history, we see that most people have had this idea that we live in a multi-level cosmos. There's a terrestrial level where we find ourselves now. Then there's some higher level dominated by subtle mental energies, inhabited by different types of beings that some people would call gods or goddesses or angels or astral beings or subtle beings or aliens or whatever. And in more ancient times, I think people were more directly in touch with that level. And their
legends, we call them legends now, or traditions, are full of accounts of interactions of humans with these different types of higher beings. Of course, if you go to some of the Celtic countries now, they still say we're interacting with them, some of the people. They talk about giants and elves and different sorts of beings, that it's still possible for us to interact with. So their culture was sort of structured around that idea that we live in a multi-level cosmos. I think a lot of their architecture was meant to facilitate that, to facilitate communication of terrestrial humans with these higher beings from whom we've descended, really, according to these ancient accounts that we find in the ancient Celtic and Irish culture and practically every ancient culture that's ever existed through the history of the Earth that we know about. But I'm not an expert on, it's not been my main focus of study, the exact topic, that you brought up. But those are my general thoughts about it. Thank you.
It's hard to be an expert on everything these days. There's so much of this. Somebody asked me one day, it was just a couple of weeks ago, they said, well, you're an abduction and UFO expert, aren't you? I said, I wouldn't call myself an expert. I said, I don't have a degree in it, so I can't call myself an expert. I may have been doing it 23 years, and I do know a lot about the subject, but I really, in these areas, I don't feel like there's anybody that can be an expert. I do feel like there can be some people that are very knowledgeable about the subject matters. But as far as being an expert, for something you can't really come to a firm conclusion on, it's hard to be an expert. Right now everything is either a hypothesis or a theory or conjecture, quite a few other things for that matter, but it's just, and that's what I was talking about earlier, it seems like so many people are going into so many different areas, and I do notice, though, there seems to be puddlings or groups of people now seeming to pop up all over the place. It's kind of scary, it's almost cult-like in some ways, but it does seem that they're just popping up, and they're getting into, one section of this or another section of this or another section of this, anywhere from psychic abilities to dealing with paranormal phenomena. And I'm still waiting, like there's that paranormal guy on TV who chases ghosts. I'm just waiting for him to catch a ghost. I want to
see that.
Someone asked me one time, you chase ETs? I said, no, I observe ETs. I don't go chasing them. They might not like that. And I figure if you have the technology to cross the cosmos or cross other dimensions to get here, you're probably a little bit more advanced than we are. So it might be best just to observe.
I think there are all kinds of people involved in this, in what I call this renegotiation of our whole picture of reality. I think there are different kinds of researchers who get into different specific topics. I think there are other researchers, perhaps more like myself, that try to pull together, the information that's coming from researchers in different fields and to try to put it together and into some kind of provisional picture of what the whole thing adds up to. I think there are people like yourself who are involved in communicating this information out over different media and trying to bring together audiences and researchers and others. And then there are And people can play different roles. Somebody may be an audience, sort of an audience for research, or maybe a researcher at another time, or a compiler at another time, or a communicator at another time. Sometimes we play multiple roles in this whole process, but I think it's a healthy thing, that there is an audience for this who wants to hear about it, that there are different researchers that are looking into the different aspects of it, that there are all kinds of forums for communicating this being created, by yourself and others. And to me, I think it's a really amazing thing to be involved in.
I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, it is an amazing thing to be involved in. There's so much going on and so many things going in. And we tell people all the time, because, people email me or mail me or catch me online or something and say, is there anything I can do to help? I'm like, yeah, join one of the organizations, become a researcher, a data analyzer. I said,
kind of interesting you mentioned that, because, you know, from radio programs that I've been on, people have communicated to me cases, archaeological cases that I'm working on now that are going to be in my next book that I'm working on now. I'm calling it Forbidden Archaeology 2. And people have also, who have heard me on shows like yours, have offered to do research, which is can be very helpful because I can't be in 1,000 places at once, you know. So I think you're right about that aspect of it.
Well, no, it's true. And, I mean, you know, we encourage people all the time. I mean, we also encourage them to do their own homework. It's a big pet peeve of mine. It always has been. And at least now I hear other ufologists saying it. And I'm glad it caught on over the last few years. But we encourage people to do their own research. I say, look, you can come listen to whoever you want, myself included, on any show that you want to hear or any support group that we host or anything. I said, but still, don't take us at our word. Do your own homework. I said, get out there and do the research. Because I learned a long time, Michael, that most people, if you let them do it, if you can get them to do it themselves, it sinks in much better. And plus,
sure,
following someone, you know. And that's something we try to teach people. Don't follow, you know. Understand this for yourself. Because people ask me all the time, do you believe in E.T.? Well, I'll tell them, no, I don't believe in E.T. This isn't a religion. I said, I have seen the data that has convinced me beyond reasonable doubt that extraterrestrials have visited my planet. I said, this isn't a belief for me. I said, I know this. I said, I can understand where people doubt or have problems with us. You know, and I did myself 23 years ago, and I really truly did. I had a big problem with this. You know, I thought all these people were crazy, to be honest with you. But over the years, I learned that they're not crazy, and somebody's keeping a big nasty secret, and that's just one of those things. And then, you know, through this research, it's brought me into other fields because, you know, first off, ancient history has always been one of my favorite things. And to really understand what we do in abductions and ufology, you have to start in ancient history and work your way forward, because a lot of this evidence is actually in the writings of the ancient history. A lot of the ancient texts, a lot of the ancient religions really instead this, including the Bible itself. So, you know, you have to really understand all these different areas to retrieve this data. So, you know, a lot of our people, myself included, are very well in tune with the ancient architects and a lot of the ancient stuff. And pretty much all of us have one or two societies that we favor. So we do heavy research in those areas. So as a group, it's a very formidable group as far as what they understand and what they've read and what they can convey to other people. And with the advent of this show, bringing in all the ufologists and a lot of the other guests that we bring on, it just adds another dynamic to the information we're gathering and giving back to the public. I really, honestly, don't think anywhere these days you can get the kind of information you can get from here, and it's a very interesting thing. But enough about that. Are you ready for some more questions, Michael? Yeah, we still got some.
Yeah, let's get to them.
All right. I see. Well, we have Joe from Florida, so I guess you don't have to come up and give us your first name and location because we know you're Joe from Florida. So, Joe, why don't you come up and ask Michael a question?
Hello, Michael. This is Joe in Florida, and I'm wondering, in your research in the Forbidden Archaeology, do you have a clue or have an inkling of what the first language humanity used other than the stone carvings? Thank you.
Well, from the evidence that I've got in Forbidden Archaeology, it doesn't really speak to that question. Most of the things that I'm reporting there from the scientific literature of the past 150 years have to do with human bones of the anatomically modern type that have been found in very, very ancient layers of rock going back hundreds of millions of years, or different types of artifacts which are either of gold, like gold chain found in a layer of coal 300 million years old, or stone, because gold doesn't deteriorate and doesn't oxidize like most metals, and then stone keeps very well in the layers of the earth. So, and then also there are human footprints, but there's not a lot of stuff that preserves writing. That tends not to survive very well. So from the kind of evidence that I've got in Forbidden Archaeology, it's very hard to say what, from that kind of evidence, what the original language was. Now, there are the records, you know, left by these, you know, ancient, you know, civilizations. And the ones that I'm most familiar with are the, you know, the ancient Sanskrit writings of India, which would say that, you know, the earliest language was a Sanskrit language. And actually all our European languages, you know, the English that we speak, Russian, German, French, they're called Indo-European languages because they have some connection with, you know, the ancient language of India. So, you know, the language we're speaking now, English, you know, if you trace it back through time, it would go back towards something like the Sanskrit language, more like that. So it's a topic that there's not a whole lot of you know, evidence for, because a lot of the materials that would have contained, you know, language, different writings, they're usually made on perishable kinds of materials that really haven't survived. But so I can't really prove it. If you ask me what I believe personally, you know, I would say that the most ancient language was something like Sanskrit. And a lot of our modern European languages anyways are related to Sanskrit.
That's just so wrong, man. We're just getting into so much stuff here. I hope y'all enjoying yourself, ladies and gentlemen. I know we've been covering several areas tonight, so just keep up is all I can tell you. And we've crossed several areas. They're so, you know, I just love the ancient history. I really do, or the ancient archaeology, because there's so much information there. And there's so many things. Well, it just seems like, because of, I guess, technology, modern era, some of this information we've either lost or is deeply rooted back in our subconscious, but we really don't think about it. It's something that may manifest itself. But there seems to be some arts and things that we had just lost. They just kind of went away as cultures fell or failed or collapsed or were conquered, whatever may have happened to them. But some of these things, which, don't get me wrong, some of them were probably better that they went away, but there just seems to be some understandings of ourselves, our universe, that seem to have went, you know, away. So maybe that's something we can work on achieving or recapturing here over the next few decades. I have noticed that most Americans and most people I meet around the world seem to be having a need to re-educate themselves on or redefine their boundaries of the universe itself, or the meaning of the universe itself. What's actually in it, I guess, might be a better way of describing it. So, I mean, I am seeing things moving in a positive direction. I just don't know how long it's going to last, or if it's something's going to come out of it, or something else is going to happen before anything can come out of it. And any thoughts on the year 2012, Michael?
Well, I know that's in the Mayan calendar, that there's supposed to be some significant events happening there. Time goes in cycles. This is something that if we look at most wisdom traditions, they have some idea that time is cyclical, and apparently the Mayans had that idea too. They had the idea that time goes on in cycles, and the cycles last many, many millions of years, which is something I agree with. It's something that's also found in the ancient Sanskrit writings. And according to this ancient Mayan calendar, at least the way that researchers read it, is that one of these cycles is coming to, one of these major, major cycles is coming to an end in the year, you know, 2012, and different people interpret that in different ways. Some of them interpret it to mean that some big catastrophe is coming at that time, and some others interpret it as meaning it's kind of like a dawn of a new age or something. So I think we'll just have to wait and see what, if anything, happens in 2012.
Well, I mean, Dad, that is the best attitude, to wait and see what's going to happen. I don't know. A lot of stuff points to something happening. I did find some interesting things, like there's going to be the largest solar flares ever seen by man will happen in 2011 and 2012. And there seems to be some other events that seem to be pointing in that direction. But what does it actually mean? I'm not exactly sure. Because, you know, it's strange that the Mayans always believed that, yeah, it was the end of life as we knew it, but it was the start of the Golden Age. So that was interesting in itself. Jeff, inform me, we have Everett on the 800 line. Everett, can you hear me?
Hell, yes. This is Everett.
Yeah, can
so
you hear
my
me okay?
Question was for the gentleman, the archaeologist, if he has any knowledge about these transformers that they found in Egypt on the pyramids, these hieroglyphics.
Yeah, I'm aware of researchers who believe that, you know, the pyramids were power generating things. I haven't really focused on Egyptology. You know, it's one of those topics that I'm interested in, probably like all your listeners are, that I try to follow a little bit. Yeah, I'm aware of the researchers like John Anthony West and Robert Schock and Robert Bival and others who have tried to show that, you know, the pyramids and the Sphinx are older, you know, than many researchers now think possible. You know, I'm kind of aware of the idea that some researchers feel that the pyramids may have been some kind of power, you know, generating, you know, mechanism, that they weren't just tombs, but I'm not really, focusing on Egyptology is my main area of research, but I think it's interesting. I'm, like you, I'm aware of the idea, but I don't really know too much more about it than that.
Okay, thank you.
What was that second part of it? I didn't hear.
No, I had a question because I have my own theories that they could be, you know, like controlling the ozone layer.
Okay. I just, because you were, I couldn't catch everything you had said there. So for some reason, you were coming in kind of low. It was kind of weird. Anything else for us tonight? Oh, he's gone? Oh, we lost him. Dang, that was quick. Well, nice for you to call in. Thanks for calling Wake Up USA or UFO Study. Some of this information is just hard to assimilate these days, and it just seems to be, the more we get into it, the more we find, Michael. That's what it really seems like. The more we look, the more we find, the more you have to assimilate. And I got to say one thing about the modern era. Thanks to computers, we've all learned to multitask. You know, everybody has to multitask these days, and we all seem to have several interests, which makes things easier as a group goes, because you can accumulate much more data that way. And I would thank the computer for multitasking. I really do. I think that's where most people learned it, is by multitasking. But, you know, when I go back and look at the ancients, it just seems like the Sumerians, the Egyptians, even the Babylonians, the Dogon, the Aborigines, the Mayans, the Incans, the Aztecs, even today's Native Americans seem to have, I guess, an understanding, a better understanding of self than we do today. What do you think?
Well, I think you're right in this whole concept that we've lost a lot of the proper vision of our place in the universe as time has gone on. We've lost some of the wisdom that, you know, these ancient peoples had. That's why, just in my personal life, I've kind of had to, I've found some value in, you know, ancient wisdom tradition of India. I practice a form of meditation that I learned, and to me it's very helpful. It's something that I couldn't really find, you know, from the culture that I grew up in. You know, so I think there is a lot to be learned, you know, from these ancient wisdom traditions. But I think there's also a lot we can learn ourselves today, as you were saying, you know, if we get out there and do the research, really.
Let me get you to do this, because I know we're getting real short on time here. We're down about 3 minutes. Guys, I'm sorry, we ain't going to get any more questions in, because we really may have 3 minutes, and I don't need enough time to answer them. Let me get you to tell them where they can find your books, where they can find out more information about it, things along those lines, and where they can get in contact with you. Go ahead.
Okay, my books are available, well, on my website, of course. That's mcremo.com, mcremo.com, and there people can find out how to order Forbidden Archaeology, The Hidden History of the Human Race, Human Devolution, and my other books. They're also available in other websites and in bookshops. And for international listeners, they've been translated into about 20 languages now, so they may also, if they're from a different country, they may also be able to get them in their languages. Letters can be left for me
on my website. There's a place there where messages can be left for me, and I do read all my mail, and I do get back to people. And so that's where people can learn about my work. On the website, there's a Museum of Forbidden Archaeology they can look at. There's also a schedule of my upcoming lectures and media appearances and things of that sort. But that website, again, is mcremo.com, mcremo.com.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Michael, I want to tell you thank you for coming on. You did a great job tonight. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I hope everyone out there, you know, heard something or learned something they didn't know or got a different understanding, you know, something along those lines. That's what we're here for, ladies and gentlemen. Again, Michael, I want to thank you for coming on the show tonight.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
Oh, thank you. Everyone, give Michael Cremo a round of applause. I hope you enjoyed yourself tonight. Remember, next week is going to be Mary Rodwell, so that ought to be an interesting show itself. Guys, remember, next week is going to start the new video features on the radio show, so that should be interesting in itself. Also, if you wanted to continue this discussion, we will be continuing this discussion in this virtual audience as soon as the show is ended. You can come in and join us if you can get in. I'm pretty sure it's full at this moment, but, you know, there'll be people coming and going, so you should be able to get in. So come on in, continue discussion with all the ICAR members and the Wake Up USA regulars, and have a good time. Also, guys, one more quick thing before we roll out of here tonight. Anyone with a recent cigar-shaped sighting in the northern U.S. or in the areas I mentioned earlier in Europe, Australia, or New Zealand, please write me at icar@cox.net. I'm very interested in these. There's been some strange events going out there that I'd like to keep track of. And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, we are just about completely out of time, so I want to thank everyone for listening to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. And good evening.
If you would like to continue this discussion after the show, join us in ICAR's Pal Talk chat room, UFO Alien Phenomenon, under the Social Issues category.
Is life moving too fast? If you're self-employed or a small business owner, you have no choice but to move as fast as you can. Sometimes you move so fast you don't take a close look at life's details. When was the last time you looked at your health insurance? If you don't have health insurance or if you have the wrong coverage, serious medical bills could mount up. That's where the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company comes in. We provide affordable health insurance for the self-employed and small business owners. If you don't have health insurance, call us. If you have coverage, call anyway. See if we can give you better coverage at a better price. Stay on track for affordable health insurance designed specifically for the self-employed and small business owners.
Call 877-735-6460. That's 877-735-6460. Home office located in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states and benefits may vary by state. Association membership may not be required to obtain insurance. Call 877-735-6460 for details.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but you don't want to sit around on your butt all day. You're on the move, and you need your music. This station is linked with the Mobile Broadcast Network, which makes it possible for you to hear your favorite internet broadcasts live on your cell phone, anytime, anywhere. Get connected. Go to www.mymbn.com. The Mobile Broadcast Network is brought to you exclusively by Access Voice.
SRN 1690 AM Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com